I'm sad Pasquale's not here because we say weird stuff to each other a lot. And I just, like, have this post-it note, and it's just, I wrote down something very important that he said, which is, noise, yoikes.
Thank you for joining us once again on the Delco Young Democast. My name is Mike DeEva. It is awesome to talk to you guys again. We're going to have some other friends joining us in just a little bit, but joining me to start here in the podcast, Oubliette, we have a new friend, one of our newest Delco Young Dems, Colleen Kennedy. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm super excited to be here.
Apparently, that's not going around.
No, it's not. So, for the folks that are listening, it's just us, and we've been texting some folks. They're gonna be here later, I guess.
Yeah, we're putting stuff together.
It's hard to wake up early, you know, early at 11 a.m. on a Sunday. It's just a hard ask. So
we make people do difficult things here. That's kind of what we do.
It's true.
We ask a lot, but we give a lot in return.
Exactly.
What we do every time we have somebody new come join us is just kind of talk a little bit about yourself. You know, how did you kind of get involved? You know, what was the story before that? You know, just the basic.
Sure. So I grew up here in Upper Darby, and went to the public schools here in Upper Darby, you know, my whole public school career, K through 12.
Royals.
Yeah. as they say here in the Upper Darbs, UD, you know. I think that I could easily say that my passion for politics really centered around public education advocacy and the rights that students really are afforded but don't necessarily get on a daily basis. I started out as like a pre-K student, and maybe even before that, I was too young to remember, but basically labeled as an IEP student or a special education student. I had a lot of learning disabilities that they sort of had to sort through. And I'm in a family of three. I have two brothers, an older one and a younger one, and we all had different learning differences and disabilities and things like that. And the public school offerings at Upper Darby School District really allowed me to not only be accommodated for my learning differences, but to really thrive there. But as I grew older, I really realized that that those same rights weren't necessarily being afforded to other students, and the same exact programs that really helped me to thrive were the same ones that were up on the chopping block every year. So my real start in politics was, believe it or not, in middle school.
Nice.
Back in middle school, in probably the 2002 to 2004 range of years, was the first time in my memory that they really were trying to attack the art and music programs at Upper Darby School District. So I got up as an eighth grade student, and another student who was at the corresponding middle school, I was a Drexel Hill Middle School student, and my friend Eli, she went to Beverly Hills Middle School. We both got up individually, we didn't know each other back then, and talked about how the music programs were really not only were what made us want to go to school, but they taught us how to be leaders of our school community. And I basically made a speech, and for the teachers that ended up knowing me in the audience, it was especially powerful because I was a student that had to go to speech therapy and all these other sorts of services. Oh. And I was getting up and talking in front of the school board. So they were proposing to cut, you know, all these programs for K through five students. And ultimately, because of the activism that folks worked on during that year, they only phased out the programs for the kindergarten students, which I wasn't happy about. Obviously, like, that early intervention for me was really a big deal. But so that was my start in politics. And then I was really involved in the music program at Upper Darby School District, actually planned to go to college to be a music educator.
Awesome.
And then sort of took a look around, as 18-year-olds sort of do as they're heading off to college, and realized not only how difficult it was going to be to get a music teacher job in this political climate, but also that if I wanted to stay back in my old neighborhood, that it was really, really going to be tough. I have a colleague that I went to high school with that he ended up taking that route, and he lives out in, I think, Lancaster.
Wow.
Super, super talented guy, a trumpet player, and we keep in touch. But I ended up doing political work instead, and then in 2012, we ended up having basically the same round of cuts, but a little more extreme. They were in 2012, they were going to cut music, art, physical education, library, technology, and foreign language for the elementary and middle school students.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, you know, year after year, we have a huge budgetary shortfall, and it's ultimately because our state funding levels are not only too low across the board, but they're broken down inequitably across the school districts because of political brinkmanship.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller districts out in western Pennsylvania get ludicrous amounts of money, while Upper Darby, William Penn, all these large districts on the eastern side of the state get completely shafted.
Absolutely. So that's actually, it's called the Hold Harmless Clause. So for the policy wonks out there, we actually created a funding, the Pennsylvania people created a funding formula that basically would have tried to fix that problem, but unfortunately the money gets broken down only among the new money. So every time that they increase the budget overall for basic education funding, that new money will go through the funding formula, but the rest of it goes through that old, I don't want to say corrupt, but frankly corrupt formula that doesn't really actually address the needs of students. Yeah.
So just to make sure I understand, like, the education budget for the state this year is $50 million, just to pull a number,
right,
hypothetically.
Just a random number. Yeah.
If it increases to $51 million next year, only $1 million gets fed through that fair funding formula?
Correct. And so the idea was to, like, you know, we talk about this a lot with, like, the minimum wage fight, like, sort of making radical changes, but over a slower period of time. And so the idea was this compromise that, you know, as we keep increasing funding, that eventually most, if not all, of the funding would go through that funding formula. But as it stands, I think we're in our second year of that policy, our second budget year, and only about 8% of the money goes to that formula. Yeah. And so, like, we talk about money all the time, but there are really, like, not only, like, communities at stake, but just, like, real programmatic offerings that are constitutional rights to students that just don't ever get offered to a lot of these students.
Yeah. And it was a little bit before my time, but I know there was a big Save Upper Darby Arts movement, which is, you know, kind of, I guess what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I was one of the lead activists on it. It really was a group effort. We all grew quite upset when we learned that all these programs were being cut. And I can only speculate. I'm not in the minds of the school board back then or the administrators, but it is my suspicion that they chose to make those offerings the source of the cuts because they really wanted us to rise up and do something about it. So that ended up working out. We were able to get, we went to Harrisburg, we collected thousands of petition signatures, we got some national earned media coverage for it. And when we went to Harrisburg, we lobbied all of the major players in the appropriations committees on both chambers of the legislature. And my good friend Steve, hopefully he'll listen to this at some point. My really great friend from middle school and high school went with me, and we basically staged, like, a very, very mild sit-in in the governor's office because he was hiding from us the entire day. He knew we were coming. We told him we were coming, and so he hid in the governor's mansion. So this was Governor Corbett, just to be clear, guys.
Okay.
Yeah. Governor Wolf has definitely done a much better job on this issue. So we were ultimately able to convince the state legislature to change the budget specifically for our school district, and it resulted in $2.7 million in additional funding for the school district. Most of it was actually permanent funding, which is rarely the case. So about $2 million of it was permanent funding, and then there was, like, another thing that was, like, from a block grant or something like that.
That's awesome. But solid work out of you guys.
Thank you. So the big takeaway, though, I just want to emphasize for folks is that, you know, we fight for this funding every year, and we eventually get it, but it's usually pennies on the dollar of what we deserve. And then ultimately the legislators that go to Harrisburg and agree with us and fight on behalf of that funding, they sort of get to take credit instead of us just having a system that funds schools correctly in the first place. So my hope is that at some point we're able to get to a place where this is, since it is in our state constitution, like, a thorough and efficient system of public education is required for all communities and all students, that's just what it is. And we don't have legislators writing press releases and bragging about it as if they did some great thing that they really should already have been the case.
Yeah. some great thing that they shouldn't even have needed to do in the first place.
Yeah. And I mean, so Upper Darby, for example, they have, I think it's Public Citizens for Children and Youth and a couple of other advocacy organizations have done tons of research about the budgetary realities for these school districts. And Upper Darby, for example, has a shortfall. They're unfairly funded to the tune of $15 million. There's a $15 million loss every single year. So that adds up quite a bit. And every year we usually are able to fight for about $2 to $3 to $4 million in additional funding from whatever the budget is. So I get frustrated when legislators brag about that when, like, you can do the math. It's quite a small portion of what we really deserve. And we had to fight for it. And that, like, that takes up a lot of energy that we could be fighting about other issues that really are important too.
Yeah, definitely. And it's especially irritating, like, knowing how well the school district does, even despite being so underfunded, you know, that they've 100%. Really made something out of nothing. And to think that, you know, the taxes that we've already paid into in Harrisburg are being kind of like, you know, people, especially on the right, want to talk about, you know, this is income, you know, this is wealth redistribution, this is income redistribution. That's literally what's happening to us here in Delaware County to pay for, you know, schools in, you know, Erie County that are, you know, have like 20 students in the high school.
1,000%. And, you know, I would just say that, you know, over my lifetime, and I think this is generally the case everywhere in the country, folks tend to try to divide and conquer. They try to divide the public education families from the folks that either utilize private or parochial schools, which is well within their rights, or the folks that don't have any students in the district. They just don't have kids, or they've gotten older, that are taxpayers in this district. And I'll just say that when you go to buy a house, the very first thing that you check on, whether or not you have kids, is how good the schools are in your neighborhood, because that's directly going to tie to your property values. So I am really hoping that during this election cycle, people really start to think about how that divide and conquer strategy has harmed us in the past, and we can sort of work together to get the fair funding to help everybody.
Yeah, and then you see people talk about things like HB 76, which is designed to quote unquote eliminate property taxes, that has a lot of support among, you know, especially older homeowners that don't have any kids in the schools, just because it basically shifts that tax onto the poor and, you know, the renters.
Correct. Yeah.
And it still doesn't solve the funding problem.
Yeah.
I think I was just arguing with somebody about that on Facebook maybe a day or two ago.
Yeah. And I think people get so anxious, and really all that folks are trying to advocate for is for the state to pick up about 50% of the tab. And the state constitution specifically requires that we provide this service. It's been in the constitution, I think, since the 1800s. And, so, you know, like, folks are advocating for removing property taxes, which is a quick short-term win politically for you if that's what you're going to vote for. But it also, like, leaves everything in the hands of the state, which, as we've seen in the school district of Philadelphia, and really, frankly, all across the state, York School District has had some struggles, Upper Darby has had some struggles, that the state really has barely pulled their weight of what they're supposed to do. Why would we put it all in the hands of the state? We need to still have some local accountability as well.
Yeah, but if we have, you know, basically the state paying the fair share out of the taxes we pay to Harrisburg, then that takes a lot of the burden off of the local taxpayers. To be, you know, just it has a similar effect.
Absolutely.
But it actually will address the problem instead of just being a quick band-aid, like you said.
Yeah, I think that that we're going to watch and hear from people that are from the western part of the state, and they're going to say, this is going to hurt our communities. Why should our communities be hurt? And I'll just say that during the Rendell administration, they actually had this thing called the costing out study. You can Google it, the Pennsylvania costing out study. And it was a legislative study that was trying to tackle all these issues back then. And they realized that it's partially about equitability. It's about how we divide up the funds. But to this day, we're still underfunding our schools just across the board. Mm. And so if we were to increase our funding levels to the, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. I'll look it up. But if we were able to increase those funding levels through some of the tax initiatives that a lot of folks have been proposing, and then also divided the money up correctly across the board, I would think that the Western Pennsylvania school districts wouldn't be harmed at all, because they would also see an increase in funding. But it requires us to actually tackle a lot of the corporate interests that fund a lot of these campaigns, especially on the Republican side, and really just say enough is enough. You know, if you are doing business here in Pennsylvania, you need to pay taxes in Pennsylvania. You don't get to have the Delaware tax loophole. We need a frack tax. We need to have folks pay their fair share when they are, you know, using our natural resources, and make sure that we're funding the DEP and all these places correctly. So there's just a lot of work that we've got to do, but I think a big part of it is just electing the right people and people who are willing to, like, take a risk, even if it means that they're only going to be in office for one cycle. Yeah,
people who need to do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
To make, you know, to actually improve things.
Absolutely.
But, all right. Yeah, no, that's awesome, you know, that it's, that that's been such a big, you know, concern for you. I know that, basically, the first time I ever met you was because of recordings you were making of the Upper Darby School District school board meetings.
Yeah.
Back when they were trying to give the Drexel Brook a giant tax break that they didn't actually need.
Yeah, so it's called the LERTA tax. I'm going to mess up the acronym, but basically it's supposed to be for economic revitalization, and they wanted to give a huge tax break to Drexel Brook, which I'm sure folks are familiar with, like Drexel Brook Catering. They're now building a hotel. And so the meeting that we were both at, this was a few months ago, quite a few months ago, probably, they were trying to give this tax break, and they were already building the hotel. So usually when you give a business tax break to something, it's to bring business into the district, and they were already working on this project. So it was a handout that was happening during a time where we are, you know, our school district community is trying to redistrict. So having all of our facilities up to date and redistributing which schools students go to, so that we have the correct class sizes and resources for everyone. And that's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. And so, like, it was really frustrating to be at that meeting and have them talking about how we need to have a tax break for this hotel they wanted to build on the side of the district that frankly gets a lot more resources. So
yeah, like, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to scramble to figure out where the money's coming from to begin with, because I don't know if you guys have noticed, but a lot of the schools in Delaware County are kind of old.
They're a little old.
It's funny. Upper Darby Councilwoman Laura Wentz was actually talking to me at a meeting at Beverly Hills Middle School back during the winter sometime. And she was pointing out, she does like theatrical lighting as a career.
Yeah.
And she was pointing out, you know, like all the asbestos on the wiring in the middle school auditorium. And it's just like, guys,
yeah,
like this is probably something that should be addressed.
Yeah,
so it's fascinating that when we need hundreds of millions of dollars to bring the schools just up to a current standard with these old buildings, they're still trying to figure out ways to kind of nickel and dime, you know.
There was incredible coverage about a month or two ago that I'm sure a lot of the listeners have read about the school district of Philadelphia and all the concerns that they have out there with, like, lead paint chips falling from the ceiling, asbestos, really high lead counts, like, in the water fountains, which a colleague of mine, Councilwoman Helen Gim, she did a lot of amazing work with a lot of advocacy organizations, and they were able to get water stations so that the kids didn't have to worry about that. But I know perfectly well that a huge concern, they just did, like, a climate survey among all the students at Upper Darby, and their biggest complaint is that they're ashamed of their bathrooms. And they're dirty, like the faucets don't work sometimes, the toilets get clogged all the time. And it sounds like a small thing, but our funding for school districts is partially tied to the daily average rate of attendance. And so if we have kids that are going in to use the bathroom and then just, like, not washing their hands afterward, obviously lots more kids are getting sick unnecessarily. Yeah. So it's, like, sort of a not sexy issue to talk about. But I think that the kids at our school district should have the resources that they're able to wash their hands before they head back to class. Yeah. Silly me.
Usually when Republicans talk about bathrooms, it means something very, very different to them.
Very true.
Yeah, that's, I wouldn't even have really thought about that. Because, like, I mean, the stuff that makes the news is, like, you know, oh, the elementary school's closed because it doesn't have working heat today in the middle of January, was something that happened.
Yeah, we see that a lot in Chester Upland School District. And I'm sure some folks have been starting to tune into this issue, but the state has a program. It's called PlanCon. And so it's a secondary funding system that just funds, like, renovation projects and stuff. And so it's a reimbursement program that you basically fill out this long, convoluted application. And then once you go through this whole entire approvals process, you do the project and then they reimburse you afterward. What we've seen across the board in the Commonwealth is that these school districts that even are able to go through the process, because like I said, it's really complicated. They go and they do their projects, and then from year to year, PlanCon is a very common scapegoat for budgetary cuts. So currently right now, PlanCon is funded at $0, and they're millions and millions and millions of dollars behind in reimbursements. And so you see school districts like Radnor and Lower Merion that have the local tax base. Their tax base is a little bit wealthier. They can afford thousands of dollars more in local property taxes. They make sure the bathrooms are clean. They make sure that, you know, the fields are safe to play on and all of those different things. But Upper Darby just simply can't afford it. We're the biggest school district in the entire county. And so when you're seeing a shortfall on a per student basis, we're actually harmed the most because we have so many students, and especially students of many, many different needs that really need to be served.
This was something that we talked with a lot of the candidates about during the primaries, especially the state house candidates.
Yeah.
Upper Darby is spending, you know, this past school year, they spent something like a little over $13,000 a year on each student. Meanwhile, you've got like Rose Tree Media spending close to double that. And some of the other districts, Marion, like you said, you know, that are able to afford it just because they have, you know, basically they're full of rich white people.
Yeah.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
No, I mean, it's true.
But, it really is, you know, frustrating, especially, you know, I didn't go to Upper Darby schools. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids in Upper Darby schools. But, you know, knowing that that's kind of like the future of the community and the entire area, it's got to be especially frustrating, especially for somebody like you who has, you know, been through it and obviously takes a lot of pride in it.
Yeah. And my mom works in the school district too, so I get to see both sides of it. I'm an alum of the school district, but I also know that many, many of the staff members, especially the support staff members that probably don't make a living wage half the time, are bending over backwards to make up for the failures of our state government. So we all have a stake in it. We definitely all need to continue to work on it. But I am really hopeful about it. We've seen the fact that there is a funding formula and that some of the money is going through that. That's a really big deal. We should thank Governor Wolf and everyone who voted for that. Yeah. We just have to keep pushing about it.
Yeah. And a lot of the state candidates that we spoke to were, you know, that was one of their top issues, making sure that fair funding formula gets funded at 100%.
Yeah. My current job, as you know, I feel like you keep pushing me to
fabulous segue.
I feel like you're trying to push me to do this segue, so I'm just gonna throw it in. So I'm currently the campaign manager for Mike Zabel, who is running for state representative in the 163rd district. So that is Clifton Heights, Alden, Havertown, parts of Havertown, and Drexel Hill. So within Upper Darby, and it's certainly his top priority. So that's one of the reasons I'm working for him. He has lots of other issues that he really cares about too, but he really deeply understands. As a former teacher, and someone who has really deep roots in this community, that this has to be a top priority, and that it's just simply no excuse anymore for anybody to be occupying that seat and bragging about funding that is pennies on the dollar of what our students really deserve. It's just simply unacceptable to have that happen anymore.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And I know that, we've talked to Mike, and, you know, I've helped him out a little bit, not quite as much as I would like to, but
I will get you.
We'll talk about that later on in the
show.
Exactly. I know that, you know, that was a big thing for you. I know that there are a lot of the people working on and especially running campaigns, it's, you know, tough to find representation for women and people of color doing that kind of work. So yeah. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I will just say that in Mike Zabel's race, we are talking about two white straight men that are running. I certainly think that Mike Zabel is better equipped for the seat, and so I'm super, super excited to be helping him to win that seat. I think we talk a lot about the representation at the elected level, and we often forget about the pipelines that need to be created for all these different communities. So that's talking about the staffers that work for them. And so I'm an out bisexual woman that is from this community and has been doing this work for years and years, and Mike chose to hire me, and so I am very thankful that he's given me this platform and this opportunity to help him succeed. We have amazing candidates all over the county and all over the state that are representative of these communities, but it's also so important to make sure not only the staffers, but the volunteer base, the surrogates, all of those folks are representative of the communities and the issues we want to talk about. I really care about public education, but I'm really excited to be working for a candidate that deeply cares about sensible criminal justice reform, sensible gun policy, sensible drug policy that is like research based and actually takes into account the Gasp. Root causes of these problems and how we solve them and how we bring everyone to the table in order to get this stuff solved. So I think all that stuff is important. There are lots of really amazing organizations that are trying to create these pipelines. We were talking about this before we started recording, but I basically think a huge, huge problem in those pipelines for everybody across the board, like, so representation, but also just like fairness, is just like the way that campaign staffers are treated, like the professionalization of this work. So that's something I'm definitely going to be outspoken and work on with a ton of my colleagues.
We've talked briefly before on other episodes of the show about the Campaign Workers Guild and people trying to organize and campaigns to pay interns and things like that.
They're absolutely amazing with the work that they do. And there's also a need for us to have unionization. That's going to be the like hardcore central way that we really make these changes. But I think that there also needs to be a preemptive expectation on the side of the employer, the party, the campaign, you know, the candidate and their committee or any of these PACs or organizations, because it happens in the nonprofit industry too, that they're going to set the standard. This is what we want out of this organization. We're fighting for equal pay for equal work. So we're going to have that be a true thing that we do on a daily basis. We're fighting for fair wages. So we're not going to have these unpaid internships that basically like eliminate entire classes of people out of this work or make it not sustainable for them. Like sexual harassment and discrimination of lots of forms just simply can't be tolerated anymore. And there was a lot of amazing work that colleagues of mine who are on state committee and involved in the party process did to get a sexual harassment and racial discrimination clause put into the bylaws for the state party. We now have to really fight to make sure that that's happening at the county level and at the municipal level too. So it's a lot of work. There are 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and then I'm sure hundreds, if not thousands, of, you know, major Democratic committee infrastructure that we really need to make sure that that's a standard across the board.
Absolutely. You know, I think I've heard Mike Zabel say that, you know, there are more white guys named Mike in the state house than there are women of color.
It's true. And so I'm hoping that when he wins, you know, we'll be raising money to help get those people seats at the table, and we'll be making sure that he hires folks in his administration that represent the community that he's representing. I think he really, really does care about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows, you know, especially knowing that, you know, he was able, even with how crazy it is to manage a campaign, he was able to, you were able to get the time to go up to the Women's Campaign School at Yale, hang out with our dear Amanda Hammack. You know, I know that was a big thing, especially when you talk about building the pipeline and, you know, building the bench.
Yeah, that was a really incredible experience. I know Amanda talked about it the past couple of episodes. I'll just say it was just as incredible to learn from the instructors as it was to learn from all of the people that were going to this program. And, you know, throwing out like all of the stereotypes, like I learned as much from the young, like, there are some Yale University students that got to go into the program. They're like 19, 20 years old. I learned just as much from them as the 67-year-old women that were running because they're involved with their Indivisible group. I learned just as much from the Republicans as I did from the Democrats. And it was really, really, truly an incredible experience. I'm still like processing how amazing that was. And I'll just shout out that, you know, Amanda and I went this year. Last year, Gina Amoroso went. Yeah. And a few years before that, I don't remember which year, but Aubrey Montgomery, who's of Philly, also went. And then Tiffany, I believe her name's Tiffany White. Sorry for forgetting that, Tiffany, if you're listening. But so we have she's already mad, even though we haven't posted the recording yet. She like knows I said that. But so, you know, we have lots of Philly and Delco people, and I really am strongly interested in making sure that that trend continues, because the wealth of information that they have, not only like the instructors talking to you, but like the PowerPoints that they give you that you can reference later to figure out your field plan and your finance plan and all these different things. It's so valuable.
Awesome. So when do you find the time to sleep?
I'm sipping my my watered down Wawa coffee right now. I love living in Upper Darby, but it's such a struggle to not be back in South Philly, where I was like two blocks from like indie coffee shops all the time.
Yeah.
I really love Five Points Coffee though, so I try to make a weekly visit.
Shout out to Five Points.
Shout out, their chai is incredible. So I don't sleep that much. That's long story short. My psychiatrist and my cardiologist both lecture me quite often about self care. I figured out my compromise was, I'm not going to be the person that gets 8 hours of sleep every night. That's just simply not the line of work that I chose. But I try to make sure that I have time to, like, socialize. This is, like, a weird thing that, you know, we in politics don't really do. Like, we basically socialize with each other at, like, fundraisers or canvassing launches. Yeah. And we think that that's, like, really, like, relaxing. And it's certainly not. but actually, one interest that has really helped me a lot the past 6 months or so is improv theater, believe it or not.
Nice.
The Philly Improv Theater is over at 20th and Sansom. And they have really, really awesome classes that a lot of people would actually be able to have access to for free. They have like a diversity scholarship. So I took an improv 101 class and now I go to all their shows. I went to a show last night. So I don't have time to sleep, but I try to make time to laugh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to take a minute and, you know, because A, it's super hot in here, and B,
it is. I am human soup in here, yeah, as some of us say.
We should. Oh man, we're gonna come back to a bunch of these a bunch of these topics here, but yeah, we're gonna have some other friends joining us in just a second here, so we'll be right back.
Though, like, at this rate, I don't know how you keep up, because it seems like every day I'm talking to someone and they're like, I just filled out, you know, the survey and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, guys, slow down.
There's
like, all
a
of a sudden,
bunch of shit.
Right. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, and there's all these people that want to do it. And we're like, we love you. But,
and
like, Mike has a real job.
And that's actually kind of part of what I want to segue into at this point. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Noise.
Sunburnt, which no one can tell, because again, this is
really somehow you sound sunburnt.
It's exhausting being this burnt. I wore white, because I was like, as soon as I went out the door, I was like, I'm gonna feel it if I have a dark color on. But the white makes it look way worse, so I'm like, now I'm lobster colored. It's awesome.
You're a liar. You're glowing.
I don't know about
the other parts of your body, but the parts that I can see
radioactively
look great.
Radioactively glowing. That's how this is.
Nice.
Oh man.
And it wasn't even anywhere near, well, no. I guess right outside. I don't know, like, where you guys go for when you go down the shore.
I haven't had a vacation in about 8 years, so maybe
Not vacations. They're just like bridge hops for momentary, brief, you know, excursions of sanity, which we all need in all of that.
Yes, we do.
But they have one of the reactors. I don't know where that is. It's right as you get off the expressway.
What do you mean a reactor? Like a nuclear?
Yeah, for energy. Oh, there's one right off.
There's a couple of them. Yeah.
Yeah, and my kids constantly, they're like, nuclear reactor, and I'm like, guys, that's not funny. Like, we don't want to blow up. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no,
just
fun.
Look away.
I feel like if I was an inanimate object, I would be a nuclear reactor.
It's not a bad thing. You bring light and functionality to the world. Oh, do you like how I spin
an
that?
An occasional terror.
Yeah. Slight. You never know what you're going to get, right?
Yeah.
Meltdown, maybe not.
My wife grew up in the shadow of Three Mile Island.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she grew up out there, so.
Who quintessentially just made the the joke of the radioactive
Amanda. It was a little bit before her time, but anyway,
we've covered all the topics.
Exactly.
We're done.
Thanks for joining us. Now, the one thing I did kind of want to touch on, rather than like get real into policy or like whatever new horrible thing is happening in the world today, and we kind of started touching on it, Colleen, a minute ago, but I'm very tired.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And, like, I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit. You know, we talk every episode about, like, what we're doing as self-care. But, like, especially from two people who are working in campaigns and actually, like, you know, elbow deep in it. You know, how the hell do you guys cope with not just what you have to do, like, in campaigns, but just with everything that's freaking going on?
The funny answer would be, you know,
we don't,
and or alcohol, which, you know, is not the best coping. Yeah. No, it's interesting because that's something I think that's come up quite recently a lot more, at least for me, when I realized I haven't stopped since this time last year. That's exhausting, and I didn't realize how exhausting until I suddenly was going like, I'm tired, but you know, beyond exhaustion, that's just a physical exhaustion. Yeah. You just go, like, you know,
passing out at a campaign event,
right. Which I I did anyway. But you know what, I really wish that we had an answer to that. Like, I don't think there really is. Like, that's something I don't think any of us have ever considered.
I mean, I have some answers, but like, they're not universal truths of how we all fix this problem. Like, in reality, this work is grueling, it is miserable, but also it's empowering and inspirational and all of those things. But I will just say that, like Amanda, like, I haven't stopped in quite a while. I was working on the independent expenditure side of things, so not for a candidate, but I've been going since the 2016 election with no stop, and 2017 arguably was a more difficult, grueling process than 2016 was. We were doing a lot of work with advocacy organizations to sort of resist Trump's administration, protecting the ACA, fighting the DACA deportations and all of those different things. And I have felt the negative impact firsthand. I literally have been, and Amanda might be able to speak to this too, I've had medical ramifications to this work. I have a heart arrhythmia, and I've had it all my life, and I've been able to cope pretty well with it, but this work can sometimes really, really amplify that whole situation, and I spent 2 days in a hospital bed back in 2017 because of it. So I will say, it's hard to cope, but I will also say...
Just a little bit.
I will also say that I'm still doing the work, so clearly there's something that we're both getting out of it.
And, well, it's funny, because when you were talking about, like, the, you know, the activism portion of it, that's actually becoming my relief, which right? Is that strange?
Like, I don't even work in it like you guys do. I volunteer, and like, I'm right now having to like take a step back just because like I can't handle everything that's coming at me, because it's like, you know, we talk about, you know, the time you spent fighting DACA, we've got kids in cages in Texas. You talk about the time we spent trying to save the ACA.
Yeah.
It just got announced yesterday that they're not paying the health insurance companies
the
subsidies.
They will find some way to sabotage it, absolutely.
Like, it's like, how do you maintain, like, your momentum and your enthusiasm, even in the face of, like, you know, I get the idea of fighting the good fight, but, like, when it seems like there's so little good news, like, it's...
I mean, I don't want to put words in Amanda's mouth, but I'll just say, like, on some of these fights, there are fights that if we lose it, my life is impacted, and I'm sure there are a couple examples Amanda can give.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, the ACA fight, I'm someone that will never get health insurance again if, you know, if they ultimately repeal this law or, you know, destroy the impact of this law, and so that drove me. I think, to Amanda's point, like, you find the projects that really inspire you, and like you feel like you're making inroads, and that's sort of your relief. And then, so that was my old coping mechanism. And then the other thing that I'll just say, and we talked about this earlier in the podcast, it's just like, you need to find an interest that is truly outside of politics, not only to take a break from politics, but sort of to have those moments to bring other new people into the work, because it's lonely. Like, we're all in this together, but it gets insular and lonely. Right. No, we're going to have to work on this for you. I mean, I go to improv shows, and I went to an improv show last night. It's amazing. They do like a whole musical, like an hour long.
Thank you, Places.
It's awesome. Freaking amazing. So my improv teacher Rob is like one of the players in that, and but they ended up doing a whole show that somebody suggested the word lumberjack, and they did a whole entire song that was like the EPA and folks getting fired. So like, you never really escape politics. It's always there. It's like when you remember like oh, I have to blink or something. Like, it's like a thing that you always have to do. But you end up meeting people that they really care, but they don't know how to get involved. And I think that that gives me a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, that's perfect.
It's an audio medium.
I love the sound of my voice. You get a lot of that too, because I'm like, hey. One of the things that I noticed in doing a lot of, whether it's been the protests or the rallies or any of the events that I've gone to recently, I find picking up on, I think I spoke briefly one time about the high school Democratic Committee of the Young Girls, you know, that those kind of, I find, fill the cup because, you know, I look at them and I go, this is the reason, you know. And I think a lot of it also helps that I have kids.
Yeah.
So I, every day I'm waking up to two reasons really in my face, especially the 7-year-old that literally I wake up with his face, you know, 3 centimeters from mine going like, oh, you're awake. And I'm like,
yeah, you're mine.
In the most creepiest way. Thank you so much. But there's that constant reminder that, you know, I can't lack on what I'm doing. Someone has to do it. And I think for me, that's always been the driving force. No matter how exhausted I get, I always go, someone has to do it. And if I say no, what makes me think that the person behind me is going to do it? And the person behind, and because I think that's how we got here.
Yeah.
With so many people thinking that they were going to be, you know, oh, the next person will do it. And there wasn't a next person, or there wasn't the engagement that it is. So now I think I've kind of backed myself into a box, terrified that there isn't going to be someone, and I just need to keep putting things in the box that I need to do.
Sustainable.
Yeah. No, it's not. And how many times do I always say, like, I think, you know, and I see this a lot, like, through, like, Facebook, where I see a lot of people kind of breaking down, and I go, like, you know, like, you know, I'll step
included.
In. Yeah. Right. No, I agree. But, like, I mean, and I really do mean it. Like, I will hold it for as long as I can for you to fill back up, and then for the love of, you know, whatever, when I pass out at events, please pick me up because I'm going to need it, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that turnaround of being, and that's again what I love is that I think for us at least, and that's why I love our groups so much, is that
we're holding hands right now.
Yeah.
We're
kumbaya.
We've lit a candle.
But that we are so invested with each other, and I think that's something that I think the older kind of crowd needs to learn, that we really are invested in each other, that, like, you know, when I'm having a bad day, or you might be having a bad day, or the next person, like, we go, are you okay?
Right.
Like, I will be here, talk to me until you fall, you know, asleep or whatever, or, you know, like, I am legit here for you. And we really are invested in each other to be able to carry on, you know, doing what we're doing. So
I think the other thing that has really helped me recently, I've been doing this work for like 15 years, believe it or not. We were talking about this earlier. Like, the professionalization of this work is a really important thing too. Like, us actually getting paid fair wages for what we're contributing to the work. And so, like, seeing that progress, like, just separate from the issues that we're working on, it makes it easier to be like, all right, one day at a time. Today was a really long, stressful day. Like, I made tons of mistakes, or like, this person that I meet, you know, I work with, you know, made more work for me or whatever. But like, I get to go into work the next day and I get to have a living wage to do the work that I'm really passionate
validating.
About.
Validating. There's a lot of, you know, validation moments, I think, that kind of come with it.
Yeah.
One of the big things, though, I think from the difference that, like, what we do working in campaigns, I really don't think maybe the average person understands how insanely long the day, like, it's not a normal day. It's not a 9-5.
It's 80-hour work weeks.
Right.
And if you're, especially 80
hour, if you're lucky,
if you're lucky, and if you're a manager specifically, you're jumping from 8 to 10 different categories of work at any given moment. And so, inherently speaking, you're dropping the ball on something every single day. It's like, I don't know if you guys remember, I forgot what show it actually was, but like the game shows where they would put you in the booth and they would just have like money flying everywhere. Yeah. That's what this work feels like to me a lot of times. You're just like trying to stuff shit down your bra like as much as you can.
You gotta learn to open up the shirt from the bottom and just let it all come in.
Exactly.
Tent it.
This is why you're here, to teach me how to do that. Yeah. How to put the money down
and
your bra.
And just smile and nod like you know what's going on. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'll figure that out when I go back.
And I think
fine.
Like at least in our friend group, like, we're all a lot more honest than people used to be in this work. Like, this is a very elitist, competitive sort of field, and we're all starting to be like, yeah, I screwed up today. Like, I you know, and we're not afraid to ask, though. Thing.
That's the thing that I love.
I feel like that's almost more of a generational thing than anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, the people who grew up with, you know, like...
Well, our the previous generation wrecked the entire economy. We're allowed to have mild mistakes, right?
Yeah. So... And it's like, no, but just whatever. The idea of growing up on, like, you know, online journals and diaries and, like, posting,
right.
posting everything.
Your angsty feelings, yeah. And then you're like, oh, that, you know, no more beer for me.
Yeah, and posting ludicrous pictures on, like, you know, Instagram and Snapchat and whatever.
Totally.
Like, people are just used to, like, oversharing like that yeah. now. So I feel
but
like that's part of where that comes
Do
from.
Do you think that's oversharing? I think that's just, like, communication the way it should be.
Oversharing in comparison to what it used to be.
Yeah. I agree. But I think that's what makes it so much better for us. I think that's how, like, I can't imagine how, you know, people that worked in campaigns did this before without, you know, leaping from buildings.
A lot of alcohol.
Right.
And some leaping from buildings.
And drugs and God knows what else that they put in, you know. Whereas I think we have a lot more because I don't think any of us just go down that, you know, campaign worker, you know, thing. I think we're campaigns. We're, you know, rallies. We're this. We're this.
Yeah, there are like deep connections and inroads that we've been building together of, like, the activism work, the journalism work, which I think we don't talk about as much, like the blogging and the investigations and the oppo research and just, like, informing the public about things that are going on, and then the traditional campaign work. It all matters, and we should all try all of it at some point. I'm definitely more of an activist at heart, but at a certain point, you have to elect the people that are going to carry out the things that you want to happen. You can't just do sit-ins and letters to the editor. And
which is a whole new thing.
Right.
You know, someone
you
said
to
me,
someone.
Someone said to me the other day, why was I at another rally? What do rallies do? And I went, you know, rallies have their place. You know, there's a time for making sure your voices are being heard. And, you know, it's actually how I got cut off on the Fox News interview because they cut my call to action off. And I was like, oh, damn it. You
noise.
but you have to have, you know, feet in both. You know, you can go out and you can protest, but then make sure while you're at the protest, you're registering people to vote or getting them engaged or this, that, you know, and going home and being active in, you know, what you're doing. But it is exhausting. And I really wish, if there is anyone that has any better ideas as to how...
I choose improv.
You can't sleep. You can't sleep. There's no time for sleep. So that's like detrimental alone.
I mean, there are only so many anxiety meds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been on all of them at one point.
Meditation, yoga, it's not, you know, it's a lot. It is a lot. And I can't imagine.
You know, but you should do it though.
Yeah.
And like the reason that, you know, I wanted to kind of talk about this is because, you know, we on the show, we call for people, you know, get involved, do the work, you know, this, that, and the other. There are a lot of people who are struggling to kind of find the bandwidth, either, you know, logistically or just flat out emotionally,
yeah.
like to actually participate. You know, there's a lot of like, especially the more and more that happens, you know, we make progress on one front and five other things go horrendously wrong.
Even when you know, just have, like, one thing you're trying to fix, this has been my experience, one thing. So, like, you know, a couple years ago, we were trying to just, like, get some of the funding back for the school district. You communicate as an organizer, you communicate the win to all your volunteers and to everybody that worked together with you. But the next battle, the next wave is totally coming. So we fought to get this funding back to the school district, and everybody was like, oh, this is so exciting. Like, we won, and, like, we have more power than the elected officials. And I had this weird feeling, and I was right. And the weird feeling was that they ended up hiring back all these teachers for, like, the music, art, all, you know, all these programs and everything. And the next school year, those teachers, until we called them out on it, they were helping to do standardized test prep instead of the disciplines that they've trained for years and years on, like classically trained musicians, amazing artists, all these different people. So, like, you have to take everything, like, one step at a time, incremental step at a time, communicate the win and absorb the win and be like, I did that. Like, I've had lucky projects that I've worked on that I've realized, like, yes, if I get involved and I work really hard and I bring in the right people, like, you absolutely can make a difference. You absolutely can hold people accountable. But then realizing, like, all right, take a breath. You know, take a break for a day or two, and then you got to get back into the work. So
maybe that's kind of where it's at, that it's okay to step back. Like, I think, as I said, you know, a little bit ago, I backed myself into this corner of going, like, if I don't do it, who is, you know? And that's not necessarily the best mentality to it, that it is okay, you know, that I think it's okay for you or you think it's okay for me. Like, everyone understands that we can step back, that it's not abandoning the fight.
There, and that's 100% valid. There are a lot of people who don't believe in their own minds that they can step back.
Yeah.
We also all have our roles too. So like, I can't be the person that is at Occupy Ice, you know, at the sit-ins in the 95 degree heat. I simply will end up in a hospital bed. So like, we all have our roles. But that's not to say like you should diminish what you're capable of. In the ACA fight, the whole entire reason that the ACA is still law right now is 100% because of some of the folks that have some physical disabilities that straight up went to DC with their motorized wheelchairs and like turned the battery off and said, all right, you're going to have to drag me out. We all saw it on the news. So like you're capable of any of the things that you want to do, but you also don't have to do all the things that you can do. If that makes sense, like pick the role that you want to have and the contribution you want to have,
and at least know you have people that you know.
You gotta tag in and tag out.
You can hit me up. I'll be like, we're good. Yeah. I'll help you along.
Yeah,
and that's something that I think maybe we need to do a better job of, sort of not even necessarily convincing, just communicating to people that if you need to tag out for a little bit. And then we need to make sure that when those people are ready, that they are able to kind of dive back in.
Right.
Because I think that's kind of, you know, that's what I personally have been struggling with is like, you know, if I take a step back, am I going to actually go back in knowing that it's going to be, you know, banging my head against a brick wall?
I think,
and that's weird for me to actually admit to you guys. I feel like you're gonna like look down on me.
No, not and see that's right there. That's it right there. Where I'm going, no, that's perfectly normal and reasonable. And I'm holding your seat with your name on it for when you decide if it is 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. It will always be there. And maybe you don't come back to that seat. Maybe you come back to another seat. Maybe it's another role. Maybe it's another, you know, angle or discipline or whatever it might be, that's fine too. Or maybe some people don't come back and that's legitimately still fine.
Yeah.
What you gave to us before was phenomenal and we would not have been able to be where we're at now and moving forward without your previous, you know, contributions. It's building a foundation on up, you know, and I think that's, you know,
I've hit.
We'll also chain you to the table here, and you'll never be able to get away. So,
I mean, this is literally my house. So.
Amanda will bring you food down. It'll be fine. Through the door.
I was just going to say, like, I have less fear the past couple years than probably a lot of us are experiencing right now and what I've experienced in the past because, like, I've hit some rock bottoms. Like, I've dealt with some legitimate, like, threats on my life and like, really, really shitty experiences and a number of different facets of my work. And, like, once you go through that and then you realize, like, oh, they're not actually going to hurt me. Like, they can't hurt me. And it's all just people puffing out their chests and everything.
There's a fearlessness that comes to it.
Yeah, you're just like, I can do anything. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to do everything, but you can do anything.
You have the greatest business cards on the planet.
I love them.
But they're not union printed, so I need to get new ones.
Boo.
I know. I really needed them in a pinch. I wanted to have business cards when we went up to Yale, so... Yeah.
Those went up to Yale?
Oh, yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, I've been giving them out. Yeah. They're what is this? What's a wrecking ball strategy? And I was like, buy me a drink and I'll tell you the story. Yeah.
What happens in Yale stays in Yale.
Correct.
But I kind of wish, and this is why I was hoping that Gina Amoroso would join us. Just I know she's like busy Gina, with a trillion different things.
And
literally.
To be fair, she's been busy with a trillion things, but Gina still answers the call because I know I'm a repeat offender, and she would say it's not an offender, but I am always being like, Gina, like, do you have a few minutes to talk? You know, and she is always there, and it's refreshing, you know. And again, you know, that's one of the many, you know, roles that she has, is that she is very capable of being and putting it into a perspective, you know, for us that, or for me, that, you know, she's like, it's okay.
She's a grounding friend. She grounds you in reality.
You know, and God knows how she does it because she's smack dab in the middle of this, you know, in a different role, but you know, she deals with the same things over and over. So, you know, yay Gina. And no, you're right, like it would have been really kind of interesting to hear, although I'm sure we'll drag
her with her the history that she has and you know, therapy and that kind of work. You know, it would be extremely interesting to get her perspective on this, especially, you know, for the people who like feel like they can't sort of get their hands around it, and the people that are like, you know, getting overwhelmed with everything that's happening.
I love her perspective because she's, I mean, this is in no way a put down, and in fact it's like a huge compliment to her, but she's like risen up in this work very quickly and really hasn't actually been doing it that long, and so she can really provide a perspective of like, oh, that's really messed up, like you shouldn't be putting up with that, like in my normal people jobs, like I don't put up with that. Or she can be like, yeah, on that campaign I went through that too, that was so you're just gonna have to suck it up, girlfriend. But yeah, it's just like, it's interesting to talk to somebody that is like elbow deep in the work with us, but also like has other perspectives.
You know, we try to tack this from being in the trenches per se, and just from, you know, experience, where she has literally the degree for it. You go like, medical professional, come here.
That's a thing that I think a lot of people are still worried about doing. It still has the stigma of like, you know, if I need to get a hand, you know, is that going to be like, oh well, you know, they're out, they can't do it, they can't hack it, you know? And I while I don't think that's the case in reality, you know, I think that's still a thought that a lot of people have, if they're even willing to kind of admit to themselves, no, I actually need a hand with this, I need to kind of get a better grasp on this.
I mean, I'll just say, like, I think the biggest struggle with that, the most important way to counteract that, is us to just communicate what our experiences have been and be honest about it. And like, I'm on an antidepressant. Like, I've been going to counseling my entire life before I was involved in politics, but certainly politics has made it more necessary. But like, that's why the talk about, you know, campaign workers and activists and nonprofit professionals having health insurance is like a really, really big deal. We need to make it the standard and all those different things. And then like, you know, we work 80 hours a week, but it's quite all right. And it should be expected that if you need to go to a doctor's appointment, you can take the hour to go to the doctor. Like, that's not stuff you should put off. And like, I've been lucky in recent jobs. Like, that's not a thing that you have to fight on. They're like, yeah, like, that's why you have health insurance. Like, go see the doctor. You need to figure that stuff out.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think there are a lot of people who are, you know, not even necessarily working in campaigns, just a lot of people who are, you know, they have shitty insurance, so they don't want to use it, or they don't know, you know, they don't, you know, some people don't have the insurance. Some people can't take the time.
I still don't have a primary care physician. It's like something I need to set up. My God. Yeah. I just like go to the specialist. They're like, well, your current insurance, like, you don't actually need a referral, but like, we would love to talk to like a general doctor about like overall like what's going on with this.
When I find them, I will let you know.
here's the 15 urgent cares that I've been to.
Yeah, exactly, same.
But
millennials.
No, you know, again, it's a communication thing. I think though it is something, and we, again, this goes back to, I think we do a lot better of a job at it from our generational kind of aspect.
I still don't think it's where it needs to be, but no, I do agree better.
But I would like to see that kind of transition, you know, upwards, that, you know, maybe those that are from like the older crowd kind of take a hint and go, oh, this is how we keep people engaged. You know, if you want to know why people don't stay engaged, probably the number one reason is burnout, and then fear of not being able to come back in and be welcomed.
I was just gonna say that I mean with the conversation around like discrimination and sexual assault and sexual harassment and all those things, I love a lot of my colleagues to death, but it's the folks of the older crowd that were the biggest pushback on a lot of these things. And like, we need to hold our own accountable. We need to like give people the space to like be treated with dignity and respect. And so that's my CTA, my call to action for some of those folks. Like, just like take a beat and think about what you're going to say to the younger folks before you say it, because it has an impact. You're an elder of this community, you're taken seriously, so take us seriously. Yeah,
even some of the people during the primary for the congressional seat were like, you know, it's great to see all these new people, but where the hell have you been?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's going to...
Super unhelpful.
Yeah, that's discouraging.
As a person who's been here a real long time, super unhelpful. I want those volunteers to stay. Let's not make fun of the volunteers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess all this to kind of say I'm very tired, guys.
No,
and thank you, I am right there too. Thank you for kind of like, I'm sorry to everybody who's tried to get on the show that I haven't gotten back to yet. I know there are a bunch of you.
They're actually outside with pitchforks and tiki torches right now, so we'll have to deal with that
tiki
later.
Torches.
Also unhelpful.
Super unhelpful.
Right through the window. No.
Oh,
kidding.
God.
Glad you shut the window earlier.
But yeah, it's you know, it's been hard for me to just keep up on shit. So I kind of wanted to like take a breath and just kind of like,
we acknowledge you
guys, and thank you guys for like picking up the slack and for, you know, not being complete dicks when I like miss deadlines or start harassing people about, you know, things not being organized. Organized to my specifications.
Oh, no. See, I love, oh, it's so funny. I love Mike's like organizational level because I think mine's like either there or maybe might be slightly more worse. You just haven't seen it yet, so I'm always yay.
So let's peel back the curtain a little bit. I'm trying to figure out what time we actually get started today. I'm sending messages yesterday via Facebook Messenger. I suggest a time, and your response is just a photo of pizza-flavored Pringles with pineapple chunks on top of them.
I know.
Which apparently means noon. That's what that means.
That was actually 11 a.m. What that was yes, 11 sounded good, and then I woke up way later than I had intended, and I went, shit. Shit. And that's when you were like, is it okay? And I'm like, I will be there. I swear I'm flaming radioactive red, but it'll be fine.
So that's kind of our peel back the curtain moment.
Right. But to be fair, that also shows, because I think you and I are very kind of usually, you know, the on time, 15 minutes early, organized, everything's got an outline, everything. And with us kind of being like, we're getting there.
There's
you
no
can
outline
tell,
today.
But you can tell that it's
the
just
struggle
starting.
Is real.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And we're in July. We ain't even
we
in
got
the,
some time
right?
left. It's
that's
gonna be rough.
And that's why I'm like not responding to your text messages, Colleen, when you're asking, can I knock on some doors? Because it's like,
by the way, let's just plug if anyone wants to come canvas for my candidate, you can email me at Colleen, Colleen, @votesable.com. That was like the one requirement of my taking this time, as I have to get that information there. So please email me, text me, carrier pigeon, etc. I stole that from your voicemail.
Yep. See, I love that one.
But like, you know, I need to take a little bit of time away right now because I know it's going to be all hands on deck in like August and then especially September and October.
Yeah.
For, you know, get out the vote and all that stuff,
which
for
is
all the different candidates.
Right, but. Which is something interesting because in talking to like with Pasquale, with the, you know, the coordinated campaign, you know, I step back and I go like, oh, the coordinated, not Pasquale, just the coordinated campaign in general. Yeah. PA Dems, I hope you're listening. I laugh because I'm like, you do know it's July, and before that it was the end of June, and I'm like, and the beginning of August. Like, I know knocking doors and meeting targets are a lot, but we have such a certain group of volunteers that do this in Delaware County.
Yes.
It is what it is. It
and
has not changed.
We're
it
trying
change.
To expand it.
And
but.
We are. And we get them in increments, but it's not this huge base quite yet to work with. So this is what we have to deal with. If we burn all of our people out now in July in 95-degree weather, you know, working as many shifts as they expect, guess what? I hope you've got a really large budget for a paid GOTV program come September and October, because you're not getting these people because they're going to be exhausted and burnt. And
yeah,
could you listen to the people that live here?
I think
just
it's,
saying.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And so, I think like we don't want to burn them out, but I think the other part of it is just like
Can't we just burn your candidate out?
Oh, I am.
Come on, Ziggle, listening. Knock all those
He's
doors
knocking doors
now.
Right now, and I'll be out there with him soon. But yeah, so I just think the other thing is, like, I was a super volunteer, and there's, like, lots of stuff that I didn't learn about campaigns until later, and it's a real problem we have. I think the Republicans probably do it a lot better. But, like, just, like, communicating, like, basic aspects of your overall plan so they understand that they're part of a team, and, like, trainings about... Like I used to do trainings at my old job about, like, earned media and, like, how to stage a press conference. And I think those are things that people are interested in. So we don't, obviously, knocking the doors and raising the money are the two most important things. But you can take a quick reprieve of, like, let's eat pizza and, you know, talk about how you write a press release or talk about how you organize a rally. And...
Believe it or not, though, I've always been a huge champion of just, you know, hold a picnic and a potluck and invite people. I think, you know,
yeah,
in weather like this, awesome. But in weather like this, I think, you know, something, you know, and we always laugh because the rule, the handbook, the campaign handbook is one thing, and then Amanda has her own version of that. I'm sure you even have your own, you know, maybe it's the Colleen Amanda book. Whereas I look at, like, months like this, yes, okay, fine, knocking doors, you know, maybe you should not do it until, like, after five so you don't die of heat stroke, but whatever. Yeah. But holding the picnics and holding events, you know, community kind of base, I think, you know, kind of reaches a lot more people in an easier way.
Cookout and
rock
party sort of weather, yeah.
Right.
Also,
and so,
you can just, like just let someone knock, like, give them a turf and then have them knock 20 doors a day until they finish the turf. That's okay, too.
Yes.
Right? You go out for 45 minutes, you knock in your own neighborhood, you do a block or two at a time. Like, that's fine, too, for June or July.
And that goes back to kind of being, you know, the burnout is taking it in increments instead of getting it just thrown all
which
on
I think
you.
A
it's
lot
all about
of people
planning.
Have, yeah, which I think a lot of people have a hard time with because they either it hasn't been planned out properly or they just put more pressure on themselves than is necessary.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I need to do all of this immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not really an easy answer, but...
No, that's why I'm saying, like, so whoever, you know, might be listening, you know, might like email things at the bottom of that thing. Just send me all these, you
the
know, ideas.
At the bottom of the thing.
Yeah, I know.
We should make lots
way.
Of references
things.
About how it's really nice today so that when people listen to it, eventually, like, it won't be a nice day, and they'll be like, this is some bullshit. We'll be, like, real hot outside.
Well, you can't
like,
see past the tiki torches and the pitchforks.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
No. Yeah, the flames are making it really warm.
Yeah.
But, you know, so basically, all that to say, like, shit's fucked up, but it's not completely fucked up. And, like, there are a lot of people working on this, and you can be one of them if you want to.
You should be one of them.
And if you're able to. If you're at all able to.
Totally.
And if you need to take some time or if you need to talk to somebody, you know, there's no... No issue with
There's
that.
There's no shame, but I will track you down.
For not helping or talk? Like, which one?
To provide you with a cool beverage and then to give you a turf.
Which you can take
it's
as
my
much...
my job, guys.
Which you
my
can
job.
Take as much time as you want to
Exactly.
complete.
That's the rule.
All right. So, I feel a little bit better. A
little bit?
Just a little bit. I'm still,
it's, no,
I'm
it's
still
a lot. I mean, I think this, no, I think this, it, realistically, and whether this makes it in or not, like, realistically, in the past week, it literally was, like, a checklist of, like, how much shit can we possibly mark off and fuck with people in one go? Like, how much, it's like a friggin' experiment where they're going, like, how much can we take and put on the average, you know, American and go, ha, 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 you
I
know?
I mean, what things, like, what terrible things in history can we recreate in modern day? Like, that's really the reality that we're in right now.
Let's put the three-year-old on trial for, you know, his parents bringing him in. And I don't know if you saw that article today. Yeah. He literally stood up on... It was for one of the immigration children, stood up on the table in the middle of the courtroom, and I went, well, what did you expect out of a three-year-old?
Well, the one thing I saw...
I'm 37, and I want to stand up in the middle of the thing. Like,
well, on the immigration fight, we need to hold all of ourselves accountable here. Like, the family separation stuff is a new Trump horror, but we've had a detention center up in Berks County that has been housing women and their children, young children, like 18 months old, for years now, and that's something that we definitely need to address. You know, yeah. We have kids like suffering malnutrition and not getting more than an hour outside a day and not getting any education.
But again, it's literally as if they are just seeing how much they can humanly. It's like maybe looking at Hansel and Gretel and watching the witch stuff as much candy in these kids until you throw them.
It's the shock doctrine. Yes. It's like, let's make it things as messy as possible, and then we use that crisis in order to enact the policies that we want.
Wow.
And it's part of a, I feel like it's beyond that. It's part of a larger strategy of let's just overwhelm as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm. And watch them drop
tire
like flies.
Them out, exactly, depress their enthusiasm and make them all give up. Mm-hmm. You know, because you
time
know,
to
we're
stuff
just being
the cash
as...
under your bra. I mean, we gotta get it together, guys.
No, and to be fair, there have been so I've been involved maybe 5 years now, but the past year has been like major, you know, campaign, so forth and so on. There have been that small break as I go from one campaign to the other where I go like, why the hell am I doing this again? Like,
it's not the campaign every day,
right? But it's not the campaign. It's just knowing that it feels like that uphill battle. But then again, you just, I don't know what it is. You just go like, and you got to do it.
Yeah.
But. You know, there's nothing to say that everyone has to be that way. I think that's just, you know.
We all have a role.
Yeah. But no, I did that today. I was going through my Facebook feed and I was like, oh, Pruitt. And then it was the, you know, kids having to stand, you know, trial on their own.
Which has been happening for years, but now it's on TV.
Right.
I'm glad it is.
But then
it
was the next one and the next one and then an invite for this rally and an invite for that rally and the Janice case and this and that. And I went,
yep.
It felt like it was just everything in one go in this week. Yeah. And that is a lot. But then again, we get to come on here and we get to talk it out. And maybe that helps, you know, enough.
Hopefully.
Enough. I know. We can blame it on lots of other things. We'll blame it on the heat. The heat tiring you out.
I mean, that doesn't help.
No.
I'm a big dude. Like, this bothers me way more.
The heat. It's all the heat. But although yesterday was nice. Was it as nice
yesterday
up here?
Yesterday was awesome.
Because I was
Hello,
on the wind.
Hello, people in the future. Your weather is garbage, but our weather is not. You're welcome.
It's Pruitt's fault, right?
Yeah.
It's all his.
You know.
Who's the... Did they put someone in? I haven't even gotten that
it's
far.
It's whoever the person was behind him.
Yeah, like
and
the
he's
deputy
a
who's
thousand
like...
times worse in some ways.
So it's kind of like Trump, you know, being impeached and Pence taking over.
Yeah.
My thought is with Donald Trump and with Scott Pruitt, I will take... lawful evil over chaotic evil any fucking
true.
Day.
True. No. I agree because with Trump, it's like a friggin' wheel that he's just like, you know, spinning and he's waiting to see like what he fucks up with this. Or maybe not even that. Maybe it's just like he stumbles into something
it's
and
like,
goes like, oh.
Who would you rather be fighting up against? Would you rather be fighting up against like, you know, the crooked cop or would you rather be fighting against the Joker?
Yeah. Right. No.
I have a tweet
I
would like to read. It's
Please.
From the Honorable John Dingell of Twitter. The Twitter. So former member of Congress. He's like the mayor / president of old Twitter. He said, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 92. Thank you for all the kind birthday wishes. Me too. I feel 92 years old today.
I was like, wait, me too. It's like, what was he going
Not
with?
Not hashtag me
yeah,
too.
That's where, see, that's
myself
how ingrained.
As well. There we go.
But that's how ingrained, like, look at that. Yeah. Like, I went, me too. What did he do? Like, that's oh how, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I am far more fucked up than I realized.
Yep.
Nice. And what are we doing this week? Oh, my, I'm laughing because I hope you don't get to the self-care part of this because I don't know what I've been doing.
You know,
that should say everything.
You got some sun at the beach.
I did like, a lot that's... of sun. Yeah, but I was down there for, you know, it was a Brady's Bash, which was great because and. I guess since this has no rules or rhyme, I managed to snag a cigar off of someone that's been a running joke now that he keeps them in his left pocket. And now I know to, you know, come up and be like, hi, and just pat him on the left pocket to see if he's got a cigar in there. And I've 2 for 2 now.
Nice.
And I'm like, you would think you would hide these things after that, you know, point.
Mike, it's pronounced noise.
And we had our Philly Young Dems. There were Philly Young Dems down there.
Awesome,
so we got
awesome.
To talk to them again. Short plug for that August 23rd Mattyunk Brewery event we'll that they're we'll having. Put all the info I know up we're at getting. Some point. There's yeah. there was something else that I think was coming. I was like, just send us stuff.
See, there's so much. It's too much. It's yeah. impossible to even keep track of.
Right. But. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's not. I can't say that there's not enough. There are enough of us. It's just so much more than I guess.
Yeah.
There are, you know, to be able to kind of keep going with it. But, you know, yeah, so much fun being awake and, you know, active and engaged.
Both,
and
both awake and hashtag woke.
What yeah. is the sleep that you were talking about earlier?
It's
no
a thing
one ever taught me.
It's a thing where you voluntarily make yourself unconscious for a number of hours.
I love the fact that it's a number of hours because it's not even like set anymore. Yeah, it's like no. they say 8 to 9, but
sometimes
the average
just sitting, standing up, like what is the position you take?
Generally, standing up is difficult, but it's not impossible.
I knew a guy that he did it that way.
Most military guys can. Most military guys can.
I saw a video online of like some little kid, like a 2 or 3 year old, who actually fell asleep wearing like adult sized ski boots, and because the boots were so big and so rigid,
sort of
his knees couldn't buckle, so he actually fell asleep standing up.
Oh, I love that. Well, that's what we need then. We just need bigger snow boots than
Hagrid
we have.
Size
Hagrid
boots.
Size. So there you go, and we just be like,
exactly.
It'd be great.
That is that how you sleep? You go,
Me, no, it's face down in the pillow, and I'm just out. Like
I just snore shit.
You don't get killed in the middle of the night. Oh my god!
It's apparently,
like,
yeah.
Do you get kicked a lot?
Not frequently.
Wow.
Because usually it's just for a minute and then I'll like roll over or something.
I was going to say, because that was my MO for hearing snoring. I'd be like, pop. Like, although I get paybacks now. In fact, it was the other night. I leaned my head forward and apparently Brian's elbow was so close to my face that I literally elbowed myself with his elbow with my face. And I was like, and there was a slight moment where I went, is that going to leave a... And I went back to sleep. I was like, I didn't even finish the sentence. Yeah. Thank you, campaign work. That's
so
much better.
Are you sure that he didn't knock you unconscious?
He's done that before. Not knocked me unconscious, but like hit, like, you know, flailing in your sleep where I've been like elbowed.
It was
and,
all
like,
involuntary. I just would like to clarify for everyone.
Definitely involuntary. Because then he feels awful in the morning when I'm like, you elbowed me in the face. And he's like,
my friend
I'm so
Caroline,
sorry.
Who I'll make listen to this, she actually shut the car door on my leg yesterday. Oh, so that
see,
was
it's deferential. That's, you know what it is? That's too. The 80 hours that we invest in this, our motor
we
skills
stupid things.
start to diminish, and we just can't move as fast.
Yeah, she's a finance director, so it's a lot. She's probably busier than I am. It's the one person that's busier than a campaign manager is a finance director.
Man. Well, we always throw mad props out to the finance directors, fundraisers, and finance people because
they
make it right.
Are hard, as we learned up at Yale.
Yes.
Y'all are nuts, man.
Crazy. I know. You start to get it. It's well, to be fair, also, it's kind of like when you and Brian were talking about breaks the other day, and I was like, I heard breaks, and then all of a sudden it was just Charlie Brown's parents. It was like, wah, wah, wah. And I was like, I didn't want to listen. It went so much further than I needed to.
You didn't
to.
Have time to listen.
I was sleeping in my Hagrid side boots.
Oh, man.
That's good, though.
So now it's time for everybody's least favorite. Why are we doing What Did Millennials Kill This Week on an episode about how we need to not pressure ourselves?
We killed sleep.
Because
sleep
usually we go, yay, we killed that dumbass thing because it was shitty.
I have a report from... I actually found the article through the website Thrillist, but there was a survey conducted by creditcards.com. Basically, the title of the article is Millennials Are Killing Tipping or Not.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. So basically, just to read off a little bit here, have you heard about the terrible, no good, cheap, devious, lazy, entitled, embattled LaCroix goes... Bah, 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 bah.
That's actually exactly what it said, because that's exactly...
Pretty much,
it's spelled A-H-B-A-B-A-B-A-B-A.
Was that a reference to us as millennials?
Yes.
Well, then fuck the rest of that.
we've single-handedly killed vacations, napkins, marriage, sex, movies, home
and
ownership,
words.
And the Home Depot.
Reading is hard.
I say single-handedly because our other free hand is usually busy adjusting our man buns or nursing an avocado-related injury.
Wow,
guys.
They love us.
Yeah. Now it appears we're fucking up the sacred American hospitality / generosity tango of tipping your servers. You might have seen this story based around the original study, blah, 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 blah. Millennials are really bad tippers. Millennials are the worst generation for tipping. Millennials make ill tipping, and it could cost them their job, you know, because most debt-laden millennials work in the service industries themselves.
I was just going to say.
You know what would be really great is if we actually had an economy that was based on people just getting paid a consistent living wage, regardless of the level of tips. That's what every other industrialized country does, but it's our fault.
So basically, the statistic that everybody's freaking out about is, quote, 10% of Americans age 18 to 37 say they routinely leave no tip. Nearly one in three leaves less than a 15% tip at restaurants. Older adults tip more.
Okay.
When presented with a variety of suggested tipping options, as you might find at a food truck or coffee shop or after taking an Uber, about one in six millennials say they regularly choose the lowest option, and nearly one in five gives no tip, the highest figures of any age group. The trouble is that this study through creditcards.com, which seems super legit and, like, doesn't have an agenda whatsoever.
Do they only count, like, transactions that were on credit cards? Because I pay with cash sometimes.
Yeah, and
super scientific.
I'll often, just because I know how fucked up the whole tipping issue is, I'll often pay on a card and then leave a cash tip.
Right.
Or, you know.
So if they're looking at receipts, it says, like, a line through it, $0.
I'm laughing because I worked long enough in the industry to be like, if you think my age is shitty tippers and the older people aren't, you have got this backwards better than anyone I know.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I don't want to gender this conversation, but, you know, one could argue that for women in this industry, they typically see lower tips from men that you didn't flirt back with.
Oh, I think that's always been one. But I look at this and, I mean, I actually do it. Oh, this is just going to rat me out for being this kind of person. But, like, when I'm out and, you know, we are, you know, within kind of, like, distance of others, I do take note. Like, I'll watch, you know, sometimes when I see someone paying the bill and whatnot. And let me tell you, routinely, older people do not tip nearly as well as people, like, our age. Because I'm always like a 20% tip. I know what that works like.
Yeah, 20% minimum.
Right. I mean, it's like a backyard Becky, just like waiting to call the cops on the folks that don't tip.
Totally. I give them dirty eyes, dirty looks.
Dirty eyes.
It's like this entire conversation, though, is completely, you know, getting out ahead of itself because the entire study is fucked up. You know, they surveyed 1,000 people. They didn't say how many of them were millennials, so it's entirely possible you could have talked to, like, 15 people.
I would guess they probably surveyed people within one geographic area, which is another flaw.
Very likely.
It was a Google Sheet survey.
Second, they're also, quote, loosely classifying restaurants, including fast casual, fast food, and takeout options. So, like, I'm not tipping at McDonald's.
Right. Are they just, like, they're just writing articles at this point just to blame us for shit, aren't they?
Basically.
So this actually really does tie back into the whole episode of thank you for making us feel shittier than we need to feel.
Yeah. And being the youngest generation on record, millennials are naturally going to be the generational segment making the least overall money. This is paramount. Not only would this factor into being less able to drop tips in general, but more importantly, it also ensures that the kind of restaurants millennials frequent would probably be ones that you don't normally tip at. Sure, when I get a slice of pizza, I'll commonly toss a buck or two in the tip jar if I have it, but more often than not, I don't. So, like, that's really the crux of the whole thing. Like, before we start discussing it, you know, how we fix an issue, we need to figure out, is this actually an issue, or is this somebody trying to get clicks on their fucking shitty credit card website?
That's definitely clicks.
Spoiler alert, they're looking for clicks.
Precisely.
However, it does kind of, you know, I mean, there are a lot of bits in that article that, maybe not that article, but the argument in general, you know, that you can tackle, you know, the livable wage.
Yeah,
and, you know,
there's always a kernel of truth, right. But, you know, this,
God,
it's just like
blaming me for shit, damn it.
It's trying to find a simple solution for a complicated problem. Which I think is really, like, what this segment ends up being about more often than not.
Right. No, I agree. Well, and or, as I said earlier, it goes back to what I love is, oh, I'm sorry that we keep killing shitty things. Like, oops. The shitty beer. We killed the shitty beer. We killed, you know, credit cards, which are shitty, too. Granted, we use them, but, you know, by their premise, they're shitty.
Exactly.
What else do we kill? Shitty stores. Shitty food.
Applebee's, yeah.
Although we have had many...
Excuse me, sir. Applebee's is a fine restaurant.
We have been there many times.
I didn't do it.
I'm quite offended. I'm never coming back.
Well, then... Oh, then man. No tip and, like... No, I don't even know what
to do. I once
like,
went to Applebee's and... I ordered my friend a Jameson shot, and they watered down the Jameson shot. So, like,
that should be a capital offense.
It's like, it is straight up illegal. Like, if you get a liquor license, you're not allowed to, like, pretend you offered something that you didn't really just offer. So it was interesting. I have pictures somewhere. We talk about it sometimes.
And I just got some flack for throwing some side shade on the people that are not tipping. What's up with that? I should take pictures of them. There you go.
Get them. Get them.
Millennials killed privacy and everything else. No, those articles keep getting better and better. I'm
don't
sorry.
They?
Like
don't they?
It's like what company can blame us for their shitty sales and, you know.
Yeah. And that took me literally 15 seconds to find.
Oh my god. It's amazing. A credit card company. That's best. Yeah.
They're not even trying to hide it anymore.
No, no. But the best part is you know there's someone sitting in like, you know, their living room with the fan on and, you know, the sweltering heat going, like, them damn millennials, look, they killed this. Yeah.
I've specifically followed a Think Piece generation bot on Twitter.
Oh, how's that?
By the way,
by the way, the 4th of July Twitter for the Democast.
You know, I had some time to kill.
Was epic.
My
epic.
Friend Pasquale would say that it was noise.
It was literally, I just kept waiting as they would come through, and I was just like, I love it. I thought that was fantastic.
The Declaration of Independence is important.
No, I
and
thought that
if we lived up to that shit, it would be even better.
I want to just be like, here's, we should, that's what we should do. We'll just start getting like the little pamphlet copies and just like, you know, anytime we have an argument with someone. In fact, there was the rally last Saturday for the immigration. Was it? I think it was. Not Love. So, Logan Circle.
Yeah.
There was an NRA dude that was in the midst of it. And I'm walking this way. And Brian literally, like, turns me as we're going. Because he knew. You know, but those would be the moments where I'd be like, and for you, I have a copy of the, you know, Declaration of Independence. Yeah. Ha-ha,
be
asshole.
Like I forget his first name, at the Democratic National Convention, when he pulls his constitution out of his pocket.
Yep. I mean, like, I want to be like, have you people actually ever read this thing? No? Oh. Have you read anything? That might help. I'm so sorry.
It's not a real entertaining read, but it's important.
But it's important, and like civics is a really good thing. But that I can upnote this. So the post that I put on today about, you know, the 3-year-old that they had, or the fact that they were having toddlers, you know, stand for their trial cases. I had posted, you know, my whole bit, posted the article, but there was a woman that I had met in Georgia who totally leans on the other side. You just know it, right? Actually left a comment, and when I saw the notification come up, I went, oh no, I'm going to have a fight. Someone's getting blocked. Like, I don't feel like... It actually was one that was relatively tolerable. She goes, I understand why we have borders. And I was like, oh, okay, I can... Oh, where are we going with this? She goes, but this... And she went on to say about how, you know, it was inhumane and so forth and so on. And I went, maybe we're starting to kind of make some traction, you know? That was a little bit of an uptake. I know,
that's
it's a struggle.
Definitely good, but like...
It's a struggle because...
If you're on the side of kids being... Of a 3-year-old being thrown into a prison cell, like... Mm.
How do you pick and choose? That was in my head too, but then I went, how do we hold the standards too? Like, I guess we have to kind of, you know, be like, okay, you're not, you know...
But it's about it's that. Hard. It's about that incremental change that we're talking about. Right. Obviously, we want the radical change, but we have to bring in the people on the other side in order to get those incremental changes that are going to right. literally impact and she's this proof one of that. 3-year-old's life. Right. We have to do it.
Right. And she's proof of that. I mean, I was really, really shocked. Like, I mean, you know, despite the red face, really shocked that someone, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the depths of the South in Georgia and, you know, she was like, no, this has got to stop. And I was like, wow, okay, we might have made an impact somewhere.
I mean, that's a reasonable statement.
Yeah. Like, no, well, I agree. Of course, we're going like, oh, really? It took the 3-year-old standing on a table. But, I mean, you know, okay, everyone has their turning point. Everyone has their epiphany moment, I guess. I don't know.
I'll take whatever help we can get
at
this point.
Right, right. So it's an uptake. It's good.
All right. We kind of covered... A big chunk of the episode was devoted to self-care, so I think we can just kind of, I think we can kind of land the plane here at this point. So I want to thank, everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for hanging out. I want to thank the band Tin Mouth for letting us use their song Generation to Generation as our theme song. Keep going, y'all. That's all I got. We will talk to you guys next time. Take care.